KALW.
The stories that draw me are the stories that deal with emotional struggle and stories that have a connection to a place.
Berkeley filmmaker Morgan Schmidt-Fang tells us about his latest documentary.
Anton would go around and spray stencils. I would say Banksy kind of does Anton's style in a way.
The new movie, Anton Circling Home, follows an 80-year-old New York artist and his love for pigeons. Then we'll learn more about that often misunderstood urban bird.
If you want to brag on family values, I mean, pigeons have unbelievable family values. And they choose a mate, and they stick together through thick and thin.
And we'll hear a reading from San Francisco author Shruti Swami. That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Morgan Schmidt-Fang grew up in Berkeley and spent time bonding with his father, who's a filmmaker. In fact, Morgan played a fictionalized version of himself as a teen in his dad's film Morgan's Cake, which screened at Sundance. All those years around the camera sparked an interest in Morgan to become a documentary filmmaker. His talent has taken him to Lucasfilm and overseas to cover the Olympics. His latest film is called Anton, Circling Home, and it's about 80-year-old New York artist Anton Van Dalen and his love for pigeons. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Morgan Schmidt-Fang.
You're an artist. Out of all the arts, why film?
You know, it's an odd question because my dad is a filmmaker. And so I kind of grew up, during the 70s and 80s and sort of watching my dad make sort of small independent films, experimental narrative mostly. And I think that given my parents' divorce before, you know, I was even out of diapers, It was a way for my dad and I to spend time together in a way that was really different, in a more kind of a creative way. And anyway, after working on Morgan's Cake and the success of that film and it going to all these festivals.
Sundance.
Yeah, I got hooked on this kind of storytelling and this emotional connection that you feel. And from that point on, I realized that's what I wanted to do.
How do you think growing up in Berkeley, I know splitting your time work between Berkeley, Richmond, and Oakland, how do you think that influenced you as a filmmaker? I mean, you grew up in the East Bay.
You know, I went to 11 different schools before I graduated from Berkeley High.
Okay.
And I was a pretty hyperactive kid. You know, and so, you know, they weren't really clinically diagnosing people for hyperactivity, you know, but I'm pretty sure I was off the chart, you know. And so I did not fit into the normal school structure growing up. And so I, as a result, my mom kind of like bounced me around to different schools to kind of see which school I would land at. And so really what my takeaway from growing up in the East Bay was being adaptable, you know, and also to relate to the way that other folks felt. And I was super interested in their stories and history. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I would take public transit, like, you know, AC Transit or whatever, I would just start up a conversation with a random stranger and just find out, like, where are you from? Why are you on the bus? Where are you going? What are you doing? You know, and I'm sure I drove some people in.
That's what I was thinking.
But other people, like, were more than happy to tell me their life story. And I may not even remember their name, but I would know their entire life story.
Yeah. What kind of stories draw you as a filmmaker?
The stories that draw me are the stories that deal with emotional struggle and stories that have a connection to history and have a connection to a place, a physical place that we would call like home, like the what is the idea of home. And so I think Anton, he has a strong connection to like place and home and this idea of home and family. And so in many ways, his family was very, you know, dysfunctional, and he experienced a lot of trauma through the war. You know, there was a lot of hunger and fear, and they had to like this isn't actually in the film, but you know, they had to house a Nazi officer in their house.
Right.
Yeah.
When I saw that part, I was just like, wow. And what's interesting about the film is that, you know, often, at least here in the United States, it may be different overseas.
Yeah.
You know, often when you hear stories of the Holocaust, of course, it's very much focused on what Jewish people experience.
Sure.
And so this was different to hear about a family who was not Jewish.
Right.
You know, and they were forced out of their homes.
Right.
And oppressed, not in the same way that Jewish people were persecuted.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to see that experience of when the Germans invaded Holland and, you know, yeah, how they were pressured and forced out of their houses and just that trauma they experienced of witnessing war.
Yeah. But again, those are the kinds of stories that I'm drawn to, because I feel like that emotional reaction, that emotional experience, us as human beings can all relate to that in a way that is universal, regardless of like where we have grown up and where we come from. We can all relate to this idea of our mortality and humanity.
And he's known for like chronicling or doing art on the Lower East Side, right? Like before gentrification. That's what his work is known for. He's known for.
Yeah. You know, he was doing stencil much like, you know, I would say Banksy kind of does Anton style in a way. But like, you know, Anton would go around and spray stencils. His work is has a strong graphic design style, and his work is very humorous and political.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes right for the jugular, but with humor. And I think that playfulness, that, you know, childlike playfulness with his work, his humor that he has, I think is really appealing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But in his peer group, you know, conceptual art was the sort of the mainstay, was the predominant style. And so for him to do narrative or commercial looking art, or, you know, almost like comic book style art, a lot of people kind of look down on it. But I think the fact that he has stuck with it for 50 or more years, he's now has a lot of younger people appreciating his work.
It was also interesting about his story. Like anybody, his story is so layered and just the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had a pigeon coop since he was, wherever he lived, since he was a little kid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Anton, his relationship with his birds is super unique. You know, there's not many artists out there that have that kind of daily devotion to animals, you know, and at the same time are prolific with their work.
I know you say you're passionate about stories about home and about struggle. And I know the work you and I both do, where we meet all kinds of people in interviews and we learn so much from our sources and subjects. What did you learn from Anton?
I think what I walked away with was this kind of role model of a whole person and a whole artist, but also someone at the same time is still very much at a place where his mind is open to learning. So even though he's 80 plus years old, his mind was always open to learning something new. And so that openness to learning something new, that openness to allowing accidents to just, you know, play out into something even useful and beautiful, to me was kind of the world that I see he inhabits and operates in. And so I, you know, I'm really inspired by him and his creativity, and it inspired the work that I did in the film, really. The visuals, trying to capture the perspective and the angle of his birds, and, you know, so much of that was driven by Anton's creativity and Anton's, you know, perspective.
That was filmmaker Morgan Schmidt Fang speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. You can watch his film, Anton Circling Home, on video streaming platforms. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. 80-year-old New York artists aren't the only ones in love with pigeons, as we'll hear in this next story from our archives. It's Throwback Thursday. KALW's Martina Castro was obsessed with pigeons ever since she arrived in San Francisco. But pigeons have a bad reputation. Many people associate them with dirt and disease around the city. So back in 2014, Martina decided it was time to figure out the story behind this maligned bird. She set out with a recorder to hear what people had to say and to speak with the founder and director of a local pigeon rescue group. From our archives, here's her story.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Pigeons, pecking pigeons, bathing pigeons, flying pigeons, walking, foraging, and scavenging the pigeons, doing everything. Pigeons cooing.
Okay, so I'm a little obsessed with pigeons. I'm not sure when it started exactly, but at some point, I realized I couldn't keep my eyes off of them. I take photos of them whenever I get the chance, making patterns in the sky as they play in the wind, huddling on telephone lines, or bathing in the dirty water that pools on the side of the road. I think it's fascinating to see how they survive alongside us in all of our filthy urban glory. The thing is, I don't know that much about pigeons.
And aren't they like, they're not even real birds, right?
So I asked around the newsroom to see what others know about them.
Pigeons, they're very smart.
I know that they are the rats of the sky.
They are the rats of the sky.
They are rats with wings.
Well, everyone calls them winged rats. Rats, pretty amazing also.
I don't know anything about them, but I've heard, you know, you hear that they're disease carriers.
I think people think they spread disease.
You can eat them. They're called squab when you eat them.
And the thing is that I really like birds. When I see urban birds, it really is calming, like a finch or like a, basically anything that isn't a pigeon.
You know how when a car leaves a puddle of oil and it rains, it gets those beautiful sort of colors, like a rainbow of colors? It's the same thing with pigeons. It's this kind of dirty, ugly city thing, but it has this weird spot of beauty. So I know that there's that and the poop.
Yeah, so I wanted to get beyond what people think and find someone who really knows about pigeons. And I found this person.
My name is Elizabeth Young, and I'm the founding director for Mikaku Pigeon and Dove Rescue.
I met her at San Francisco's Dolores Park.
Humans have done terrible injustices to pigeons and have very strong opinions that are, for the most part, inaccurate.
Young started the rescue back in 2007. At the time, she was volunteering with San Francisco's City Animal Shelter, and she saw that pigeons were dropped off, but never adopted, meaning they were often euthanized. So she set out to find people to take the birds in. Young brought one of these rescues as a surprise guest to our meeting.
This is Mr. Margaret. Hello. Maybe get some of his little gruntings.
Mr. Margaret looks like an elegant, portly version of a white dove. But technically, he is
a king pigeon, bred for meat and sold as squab.
You can eat them. They're called squab.
Mr. Margaret somehow escaped the butcher and was found wandering around Golden Gate Park. Over the years, Young developed a network of volunteers to help her find foster homes for the birds she rescues or to get them permanently adopted. And I should point out, the adoptable pigeons are ones like Mr. Margaret, totally domesticated. The ones we see out in the streets, those are called feral pigeons.
There are 300 wild species of pigeons and doves all over the world. The feral pigeons are descendants from rock pigeons that were brought over in the 1600s from Europe and the Middle East and North Africa, where they're native.
Over time, some of these got away or were released, resulting in the breed that we now know as our city pigeon. And city pigeons are pretty much the same, no matter what city you're in, Chicago, New York, San Francisco. But the key point Young wants to make is this.
They're all here because of us.
Our fault. And in her mind, our responsibility. So that's why Young is pretty frustrated by all the negative myths out there about them.
This is kind of dirty, ugly city thing.
Pigeons love to be clean. Pigeons are crazy about bathing. They're very meticulous about their hygiene. So if you ever see a dirty pigeon, it's because they're living in a dirty environment.
I think people think they spread disease.
As far as disease risk, that is a big myth. Pigeons have amazing immune systems. They're actually really resistant to avian flu. They're also resistant to West Nile virus. So we are much more of a danger to their health than they are to ours.
But some myths are true, like this one.
Pigeons, they're very smart.
Pigeons have been rated up in the top for animal intelligence. They self-recognize in mirrors, which is something that children can't do until they're a certain age. They recognize human faces and remember them. They can abstract those human faces from a photo to an actual person, which is it's a concept that most animals can't process.
And then Young says something I've never heard before.
They're completely loyal. They mate for life, and they are totally devoted to their mate and their young. In fact, if you want to brag on family values, I mean, pigeons have unbelievable family values. And
so when you say mate for life, as in they choose one mate?
They do, and they're very deliberate, and they choose a mate, and they stick together through thick and thin. I've worked now directly with almost 600 pigeons and doves, and in these past 6 years, I've seen, I think, two divorces.
They're monogamous too? As you can imagine, the more I hear about the pigeon, the more I fall in love with this humble little bird.
Okay, so put it
there. You go. You go. You can just get them settled.
Okay.
Sort of reassure them a little bit.
At some point, Young hands over Mr. Margaret. She tells me to cradle him in one arm and hold him tight up against my chest. Pigeons like the security. He coos and eventually settles in.
I think it's really important. I think if our world was nice to a creature as common and humble as a pigeon, that it would be nice. It would like trickle up compassion. All they want to do is live.
In that way, the city pigeon isn't so different from the city person. Maybe if we take the time to appreciate them, to recognize their struggle and their beauty, we'll find something more in ourselves. For Cross Currents, I'm Martina Castro.
That story first aired in 2014. Since then, Mikaku for Pigeons and Doves Rescue has been renamed Paloma Sea Pigeon and Dove Adoptions. They now provide rescue, foster care, treatment, and adoption services all over Northern California. We've got a link to their website at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Next, we're going to hear from a San Francisco author in another episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Shruti Swami lives in San Francisco. Her book, The Archer, came out in September.
And it's a coming-of-age story. It takes place in 60s and 70s era Bombay and follows my protagonist, Vidya, as she comes to a sense of self and to ecstatic connection through the pursuit of Kathak, which is a North Indian classical dance. And the section I'll be reading from is when Vidya is a very young child and discovers Kathak for the first time and doesn't quite know what she's seeing. There were girls moving with purpose in this room. Their movements were described twice by the rhythm of finger and palm against drum. A man played the drums, pulling from them a range of tones, both heavy and light, his fingers springing away from the dark chords. And by spoken voice, a woman recited the rhythm in a language of single syllables, mysterious, expressive words, both odder and more familiar than English. And a third time by the bells wound thickly around the ankles of the best girls and thinly around the ankles of the younger girls, some almost as young as her, some teenagers or even young women, moving with varying grace and control, but all moving with purpose. Their bodies taut with the effort of their correctness, their feet speaking and their eyes driven inward. Vidya in the doorway was not seen, was only seeing, her body lifting unconsciously, straightening itself, wanting to stand and move correctly as she watched a girl in the front of the room moving in a whirling yellow chemise.
That was Shruti Swami reading from The Archer.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more Bay Area authors read from their latest works at kelw.org/newarrivals. Before we go, here's some new music from a local band. This is the group The Bonafides, and they'll be playing at the Sausalito Cruising Club this Saturday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Adubu Traore, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adel, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Maybe keep me feeling good. We gonna do everything we could. Maybe keep me got my tribe.